I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now you're welcome along to the Huddle Breakdown. Ender here with you with James and Alan as always. Alan is back with us and I promise you that my connection is better this week, as is my sound. I might go a little bit fuzzy on the YouTube stream, but there will be no angry plate holders and smashing of glasses behind me this week. James is with me, but Alan is back as well. Alan, how are you feeling?
Yeah, good, thanks. Very good. I'm glad you've left the angry French behind and you're with those pleasant, amicable Italians.
Yeah, I've got no a dramas bottle there. Of beer Moretti in my hand, so I'm going to be chilled out for this preview of the season and the preview of the weekend as well, as Celtic kick off the season against Aberdeen. The Liam Scales Derby, I hear they're calling it, and it's going to be the biggest game of the season so far. That's what we're calling this game, the Liam Scales Derby. James, how are you getting on?
Well, thank you. So where in the world is Waldo today? Where are you?
So I am in somewhere in the Italian mountains, in between Florence and Bologna. So somewhere there. I'm not exactly sure what the place is that I'm staying in, but that's where I am geographically.
Okay, good to know.
So there is a lot to get into this week. There is the game this weekend, which we will preview in a little bit more depth later on the show, but we haven't really talked about the season coming up as a whole. We've done transfers, we've done things like that, various discussions on how Celtic may play, but in terms of the season that's coming, this is a pretty big one, Alan, because look, it's what they call second season syndrome for teams coming up from the Championship into the Premier League. It's a second year in charge for Ange Postecoglou. It's really I'm deeming it his first proper season in charge, because he had a full summer to himself. It's his team, it's his players, it's his squad that he put together. And the pressure is now all on him rather than when he came in first. People are already writing him off. Now he comes with the pressure of, okay, he's won the league title, they're in the Champions League, what are they going to do this year?
Yeah, I wouldn't quite go that far, in the sense that I think we all kind of agreed that, you know, you need to give a manager probably three transfer windows. He's probably had two and a half or two. We're not even finished this one yet. So I think probably still shaping the squad in his own image. I don't think we're there yet. If, you know, listening to and reading seasoned Ange watchers, the historical precedents for what they're worth seem to be that season two is usually where you start to see the sort of the magic happen. So that's an enticing prospect. And I actually think that in pre-season, I know we've had various debates about, you know, to what extent it matters or doesn't matter, is irrelevant or irrelevant. I mean, I'm kind of thinking, my own view is that it's relevant to a point, right? Clearly, there was no point in playing these games unless you're trying to get something out of them. So for the very least, you know, what is it you're trying to get out of them? What is it that you can see? And I think what we've seen in pre-season in short bursts has been a tremendous uptick in intensity of the way that Celtic are playing, in terms of both, you know, with and without the ball. And that means a greater coherence around attacking movement and more choreography, if you like, around midfielders attacking the box, especially more aggressive inverting of wingers, etc. So I think that aspect of those attacking patterns have clearly been worked on, and I think there was great evidence of that in pre-season. And secondly, without the ball, we've seen you know, hyper-aggressive pressing without the ball. And actually what that did, because I think, you know, pre-season friendlies generally, you know, I think as I've said many times before, it only takes 1 or 2 percentage points of any attribute to drop off, and it makes a massive difference. So a pre-season friendly generally doesn't have that intensity. So you're back in the, well, does this really matter? What am I learning from this kind of camp? But actually, if you look at the games that Celtic played, they were generally, apart from the first one, they were and the 4-2 game against, I think, quite a poor Czech team, I think it was. The other games were actually played in a very competitive way. And I think Celtic kind of were so aggressive in their pressing that the other teams thought, whoa, hang on, you want it to be like that, do you? Right, come on then. You know, it's a bit like, you know, poking Michael Jordan at practice. You say, okay, then the gloves come off and right, we're really going to go at it, even though it's a training session type of thing. So I actually think that for small amounts of time, usually up to 60 minutes maximum, those preseason friendlies were not a bad indicator of the things that Celtic have been working on and what we can expect to see. And actually, we're better than average workouts for the team, irrespective of the results, because of we almost provoked the games to be played at quite an intensity for pre-season. So I think there was quite a lot of positives to take from that. I don't think I've actually answered your question. Kind of wandered off there about how we're going to get gone. But what I'm saying is that in terms of, you know, Postecoglou and season two, I think there's evidence there already that we're going to see quite a step forward in the coherence and the ability of the team to play to the template he's trying to implement.
Yeah, I think Dean Smith sort of alluded to what you're talking about there with the comments he made after the game in terms of Celtic's movement and the choreography of the play and how intense their play is at this stage of the season. One interesting point is, I don't know if you saw the most recent interview on 67 Hail Hail with Hamish and a former coach that worked with Ange.
Not yet. It's on my list.
In Japan. Yeah, there's a great clip he put out on his Twitter where the coach is talking about the intensity of training and how training is as intense as it possibly can be, and they only have 2 minutes to get to each drill, and everything is done at a pace that is absolutely relentless, sort of like the style of football that he expects. So I do expect Celtic to go up another gear. I did a preview on this channel about a couple of days ago talking about it, James, and I was trying to imagine, like, what do I want to see from this season? And really it is just progression from last season. And if it's progression from last season, then it's going to be pretty damn good, really.
Yeah, I agree with Alan. I think that the potential, particularly in the early stages of the season, and really August, like if you're a betting person, bet total goals over in most games. I think the break even level's 2.5 for Sunday. So I've already put a small coupon on the over for that. Celtic scoring more than 2.5 goals, and I think that we're likely to come out of the starting blocks here pretty explosively. I had an exchange with somebody today via DM, and the way I characterized it, they'd asked me about the kind of, you know, what looking forward to the season and the league campaign. Celtic with this evolution with playing heart higher, it's really going to create a Sophie's choice for the opposition, right? Do you actually, it's almost like a dangling enticement to get them to come out and press. And I think there's a reasonable narrative as to why that could be effective against Celtic, against certain level of opponents, most of them not being domestic. But that carrot could draw them out. Otherwise, we're just going to cause people to bunker because of what Alan's saying, pointing out this movement that's now, I mean, it's crazy. You just watch what's going on with the patterns of play and the movement. I mean, it's going to be an absolute nightmare for domestic opposition, I think. So if they do come out for a period of time, and I talked about this a little bit last season, that, you know, one theoretical strategy against Celtic would be that early ambush, try to pick up a goal off of an early mistake with the high press and then bunker, that kind of thing. So I think that's still probably a way that a lot of domestic opposition are going to pursue, but that's opening themselves up to us just completely obliterating them. So I think we're going to see a lot of high score lines, particularly early in the season. My concern is more so everything you just talked about and the ability for the squad to endure all of this, given the fixture congestion because of the World Cup. And depth is better, but outside of that kind of top 14, 15, I think we've had the consensus on the show so far that, you know, we're not more than one or two injuries away already from, unless there's significant changes here in the last few weeks of the window, from a Gregor or a Kyogo, you know, a couple of key people if they're out for any significant period of time. And we saw from last season, everything that I've heard and read, I don't see a shift in culture coming up as far as like dialing it back to manage the injury problems. So depth will help that to a degree. But if we're going balls to the wall in training every day, we're playing twice a week and, you know, not rotating the way that you'd probably ideally like, and going up against Champions League level competition where take that intensity up even higher. I worry that as the season goes on, you know, kind of that the winter doldrums of January, February, and into March, that's where my concern comes in. But I think, you know, for the first 2-3 months of the season, I think we're going to be, you know, independent of Champions, I guess that's a separate issue. But domestically, I think there could be some real fireworks.
Yeah, we'll touch on Champions League as well on this podcast, but just in relation to, I suppose, the domestic things or the squad as a whole, somebody did a sort of a compilation video of Hatate in preseason and some of the things he's been doing in terms of his passing, some diagonal balls, which you might see a bit more often this season. But I know season previews are a bit tough to look back on at times because you're making wild predictions for the season. I've asked you to pick out a couple of things to look out for this season. But before we do that, let's talk about some players that we might want to watch this season and see how they progress. Hatate is the first person that I want to talk about here on. We initially came in, obviously, he had an amazing start. And then we saw a little bit of a drop off in his performances. He talked about being tired. He had a long season before this. He's finally had a bit of a break mentally and physically. And now he's coming back in. We all know the sort of work ethic that these Japanese players do tend to have. I think we're going to see a lot of things from Rio Hatate, a lot of good things from Rio Hatate this year. And this could be the year that we see the animal that we sort of looked at in the data before, when he signed for Celtic first.
Yeah, I think when he his first couple of appearances, there were moments, a lot of moments. And there were also, we saw hints of a very dynamic midfield player who is comfortable running with the ball. He's got that lovely ability just to turn his body quickly and move away from people without even having any great ground speed. And his range of passing as well is exciting, really exciting. I think the first game he played against Hibs, I think it was, and you know, I just thought, wow, you know, the packing stats are going to take a pounding with this guy. He just looks like he wants to break lines all the time. It didn't really pan out. He produced memorable moments in games, but if you actually looked at his underlying data, it didn't compare well to any of his peers, Rogic, Turnbull, O'Reilly. You know, very low output overall, but because he produced some spectacular moments, that's the things that people actually remember. So I was not concerned, but it was evident to me that, you know, this is a guy that's going to take a bit of time to settle and produce consistency. And listen, you know, he's been very honest and open about the problems he's had in terms of his own physical conditioning, just adapting culture, language, and all that sort of stuff, and it's completely normal. And as I say, I keep coming back to, I know people will look at it and go, oh, he's 23, 24. He's a young player. He's a very young, inexperienced player. He's not got anything like the number of minutes in his legs that a 23-year-old would have in this country. He's more like a 20 or a 21-year-old in terms of his exposure to top-level football. So we need to be patient with him. I think we've seen, again, glimpses over periods of the preseason friendlies, where it seemed like, you know, his good patches were getting a bit longer, and that dynamism that was hinted at was being shown to great effect. So very excited to see him. O'Reilly, again, it was another one who, similarly, a young player who, you know, he's in the growth stage of his development as well. And again, he looked a little bit quicker. He looked a little bit more certain. He looked a little bit more dynamic, a little bit more adventurous even. I think that those two, I would imagine, will be starting actually on Sunday as the first picks. And they looked with a full preseason under the belt and full, period of weeks on the training field, absolutely good to go.
Yeah, O'Reilly is someone that I've picked out as probably my player of the year, and not very imaginative, as you can tell. But we might come back to him just after one other person here, James, and that is another midfielder in David Turnbull. Because, I mean, where do you start with him? He had a pretty solid season last year before his injury, contributed quite a few goals, quite a few goal contributions on top of that. And yet it just seems like he's sort of a peripheral figure at Celtic or in Celtic's midfield at the minute, especially with Hatate coming in, O'Reilly coming in January, Moy coming in now. You're almost wondering, this starlet that looked like probably the future of Celtic's midfield 2 years ago is now a squad rotation player.
I think that's true. I think, he's definitely got some aspects of his game that are still very high quality, but relative to Ange's style of play, some of his deficiencies, I think, get exposed, particularly against higher quality opposition. So his lateral quickness isn't great. His kind of directional speed or pace isn't the greatest. His decision-making at times, particularly as it relates to kind of creative passing in the final third, kind of is spotty, shall we say. So he doesn't seem to have that range of passing that Hatate and O'Reilly have, that kind of creative spark, almost like Rogic, those through balls and the switches of play. He just doesn't quite seem to do that at the same level. So I think as far as a rotational player, I think he's very good in that regard. I mean, in that it's unrealistic for us to think that we're going to have, 2 to 3 players of redundancy at every position at a, last 8 Europa League level. The question is whether or not he's content with that kind of role, given his career stage and his development. And what his kind of longer term career path would be. As I said earlier, my comments about the amount of minutes, the fixture congestion, the desire for rotation, I think if we handle the schedule properly and do rotate properly, there should be ample opportunity for him to play. And we're going to get quality out of him, and good enough quality against, 8, 9, 10 teams domestically, that I think he could be invaluable.
He spoke about the competition between himself and O'Reilly and Hatate as well in the midfield. Last season, Matt O'Reilly spoke about that as well and the rotation between them. Alan, is it unfair to say that, rotation is almost a dirty word when it comes to a player, that he's a squad rotation player? But, I mean, he's an important player as well as being someone who may not start every game, because he scored, 5 goals in the league last year as well as 5 assists. And, I mean, there's going to be rotation with the amount of games the Celtic play at the intensity that they play anyway. So it's almost like he is a first team player, regardless of whether he only starts once every 3 games.
Yeah. I mean, on Turnbull, people forget right quite quickly that he was actually the mainstay of that midfield for half a season. He played virtually every minute up to the League Cup final when he got injured. And he was producing a good level of goals and assists, but his underlying numbers were improved on the season before. So for me, that fits the criteria that he was developing really nicely along his career path, and I was really happy with him. And then because he wasn't in this team, because he had a bad injury and it took him a long time to come back, that sort of gets kind of narrative becomes, oh, he's now only a squad player. So I don't see it that way at all. I think he's there to battle for the other two for a first team spot. But again, this notion that we're going to, you know, it's not like the 1970s where, you know, Liverpool can play 60 games and use 16 players. It's just, we're just so far from that now, right? And as James said, the intensity that Celtic play at, everyone's going to get their minutes. And if we're back to five subs in a game, you're looking at, you know, 30, 40 minutes potentially at minimum every game. And I'm sure there will be some rotation around that as well. So hopefully there will. I'm hope that they're monitoring all the sports science KPIs and their triggers for saying you should probably not start this week and all that sort of thing. That's what the sort of thing I hope goes on. So I've got no concerns over David Turnbull. I think he'll be a really valuable player for Celtic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I guess anybody who's on the bench is, because Celtic do use their subs. That was a conversation we had multiple times last year, is how are Celtic going to use their subs? And I think we saw more at the end of the season when everyone was fully fit and when Celtic were thrashing teams like 5-0 every 2 weeks, that they were able to make these substitutions. But I guess just moving forward, before I get your picks for players to watch this year, Giakoumakis is going to be an interesting player this season, because, I mean, what an end to the season he had. He finished top goal scorer, I think, with his goal in the last game of the season. He ended up being the top goal scorer. He got his opportunity. He took his opportunity. But it just still feels like Kyogo is the number one man when it comes to Ange ball and the Ange system. And even, I mean, I think most Celtic fans would probably admit that they'd pick Kyogo over Giakoumakis. So interested to hear what your thoughts are on the front three in general, be that with Jota now a permanent signing and Maeda coming into his, again, sort of Hatate similarities there with the rest that he got. So interested to get your thoughts on that front three makeup and who you think is going to be there.
Yeah, I think the nice part about the front three is that we've got the depth and quality now. Where if you need to give Maeda a break, you can have Jota on the left, Abada on the right, Kyogo through the middle, or, yeah, I think the starting 11, let's say the preferred starting 11 at the highest level will probably be Maeda, Kyogo and Jota. We'll see about that. But I think, you know, I've been fairly consistent on this, and my views haven't really changed. I think that the gap between Kyogo and Giakoumakis is significant. And, you know, the gap there doesn't get exposed much against most of the domestic competition. And if you look at their performance profile, the issues that Giakoumakis have, as Alan and I have talked about in the past, is on the ball. I mean, he's just not that. I mean, all of the one-touch finishing that he's had has been amazing. But the idea that that's going to persist at the level that it's been at, I think, is probably unrealistic because it's been so good. So when you get in, you know, when you're playing against a bunkered, you know, St. Johnston team at Celtic Park, Giakoumakis is going to be, you know, fine, if not maybe even on the margins, possibly more helpful in that kind of situation than Kyogo. But when you get into the derbies or against higher level teams in the Champions League, every time that Giakoumakis fouls, or every time he fumbles a ball or misplaces a link up play, which he does at a dramatically higher rate than Kyogo, those turn into transition opportunities for Man City or Salzburg or one of these other teams that we're going to face in the Champions League. And that those, you know, negative actions, we'll call them, are where I think the gulf emerges, because he's not a creative player, right? So he's not going to create opportunities for his teammates like Kyogo does at a much higher rate. So when you kind of factor all that in, you don't have the upside of creativity and you still have a lot of the downside of turning the ball over. What you're left with is finishing, and that will vary. Even the best strikers will have periods when they're just not quite on it. So that's where I think, you know, and it's, you know, spoiler, right? You know, Kyogo's our best player probably, or right there. And I think it's somewhat amusing the degree with which I think he kind of is being not undersold, but kind of the relativism of the other players on the squad. So I think as long as he can stay fit, which is a big question, you know, I think Kyoko is the by far the standout player there.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing about it is sort of like the Turnbull situation where, you know, Kyoko was out for so long last year that people forgot everything that he did prior to that. And prior to that was one of the best players that we've seen at Celtic for a long time. Going to play devil's advocate a little bit, Alan, just to throw this question at you as well. In the Champions League, could Giakoumakis play the sort of Georgios Samaras role that Samaras used to do back in the day, where he was just an absolute nuisance to these sides in a completely different way to what Kyogo would be? Kyogo is a nuisance with his movement, but Giakoumakis brings something different.
Yeah, I disagree a little bit with James. I mean, if you actually look at Giakoumakis, was closer to his expected goals than Kyogo was, actually pretty much bang on the money. And if you look at the shots that Giakoumakis takes, they're beautifully clustered in the centre of the goal, right, quite intensely so. Now you could argue in Europe that will he get that opportunity, but I think his movement, his special skill, is that movement, that 1 to 2 yard movement in the box to get onto things, and the fact he, as long as he gets some part of his body on it, he seems to be able to put it on target. And I think that scales pretty well to the highest level, because they're the sort of chances you're going to get. You know, he gets a toenail or his backside on it as it flashes across the goal. You'd fancy him to get it on target. Now, I completely agree with James in terms of link-up. I mean, he's three times less creative than Kyogo in terms of expected assists and so forth. But I think, I think he's one of the smartest bits of recruitment I've seen at Celtic. Because I was pretty disparaging of him when I first saw him, because I look at technical ability, I look at first touch, I look at balance, I look at awareness, I look at all these things. But actually, for the role that he's been asked to do, he's actually super skilled in the precise areas he needs to be to perform the role he's asked to do. So I don't actually have any worries about him playing in those games at all.
Can I just butt in there and just ask a very broad question that I don't want it to lead to a 30-minute conversation, but it could well do. Is there an argument to be made then that Celtic might play a more effective brand of football when Giakoumakis is the striker, because they know he's going to be in those positions to get that one-touch finish? I remember a couple of years ago, Man City did that with Raheem Sterling. Pep Guardiola was like, well, what can I do with this guy? He can't finish, he can't shoot. Okay, I'll get him in the six-yard box and he'll tap the ball in. Is there an argument to be made that Celtic maybe play a little bit more effectively when Giakoumakis is in there, because they're playing to his strengths and that leads to more effective chances?
No, I mean, listen, I'm trying to sort of, you know, a little bit of kind of forcing a debate to some extent, because I do believe Kyogo is a far superior footballer, but I wouldn't worry about Giakoumakis playing so much, because what you'll get with Kyogo is better quality movement and more options in terms of
and a better
go early. Yeah, well, in terms of going early, going longer, going quicker, you need to be quick and you need to be accurate to unlock this quality defence Celtic will face. And so I guess Kyogo, to use a lazy expression, is probably, you know, Kyogo is more of a sort of a rapier as opposed to a blunderbuss sort of thing. You know, he's a bit more subtle as a footballer, which is kind of what you need overall. But I wouldn't discount Giakoumakis, because I don't think he needs to have the skills of a Benzema or a Thierry Henry or something like that to be an effective striker in this Celtic team. He just needs to bloody well get on the ball in the middle of the 6-yard box and get something on it.
Right. So that's where, again, for 7, 8, maybe 9 teams domestically, I think that's not going to be a problem, because they're going to be bunkered and we're going to dominate. And this season, it's probably going to be even more absurd in that degree or in that department and the degree. My concern is very specifically for the Champions League. So, and I pulled up a couple of figures here. So Kyoko averaged about 50% more passes in open play than Giakoumakis. Giakoumakis had basically 1 in 4 passes was a turnover. Okay. Kyogo's is 1 in 10. Right. So again, if you think about that relative, so Kyogo is actually doing something when he passes the ball, meaning that he's more skilled in creating chances for his teammates. Whereas Jack Amakis, the risk reward of him touching the ball at all is very bad, right? Outside of the box. And if we're playing, because we're a pot four team, we're going to be playing very, unless we get the inside straight draw.
No, we won't.
Well, I keep doing black magic and various voodoo things to try and get that to happen. But, you know, if we draw a certain caliber of team, just the practical reality is that we're probably going to, like we did to a degree in Betis and against Leverkusen, and we're probably going up a notch from those two teams, if not two notches in some instances in opposition, it's going to be more counter-oriented. I mean, the idea that we're just going to impose our will against Man City or that ilk is not a high likelihood. So it's going to be more of a transition kind of game. And that's where, you know, how do we get out of our own end if it's Jack Amakis as the focal point to try and, you know, the hold up play and people, oh, he's big, he'll get on the ball. That's great. He might. And then what's he going to do with it? And that's where the profile is there, is that it works out negatively a lot more, where he just gives it back to the opposition. And I think that that's my concern. I agree. You know, inside that kind of 12-yard area, if he gets that chance, you know, but my concern is against a lot of those teams, we may only get one or two of those off of set pieces or from open play where we actually have build up possession and control around the opposition box for any significant period of time. And again, he's not facing center backs from Motherwell and St. Johnstone. He's facing, you know, another caliber of defenders as well. So that's my broader, it's not only his skill set, it's how it kind of interrelates with how we're likely to have to play against some of these teams and, you know, where we're going to end up increasing pressure on ourselves as opposed to diffusing it and losing those chances. I mean, we literally may only get three or four good transition opportunities in some of these games. And I just have a much higher confidence that Kyogo is going to be able to play a productive role to capitalize on those kind of situations over.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Jack Amakis.
Yeah. Let's talk briefly about the Champions League then, because, I mean, we'll do a proper Champions League preview when we have the group stages. But last time Celtic were in the group stages of the Champions League was 2017-18. Paris Saint-Germain, Bayern Munich, Anderlecht were the opponents. 5-0 defeat to Paris Saint-Germain at Celtic Park. 3-0 win away to Anderlecht. Beaten 3-0 by Bayern Munich away from home. Beaten 2-1 away at home to Bayern Munich. Beaten 7-1 away to Paris Saint-Germain. And beaten 1-0 to Anderlecht in the final game of the group stage of Celtic. went through into the Europa League from that, with a negative goal difference of minus 13 in the group stages of the Champions League that season. Look, this is going to be a difficult enough Champions League return for Celtic. It's been so long since they've actually been here. Are we expecting anything from Celtic in the Champions League this year? My prediction really is just that they're going to be the most fun team to watch. And that's taken the biases out of me supporting them. I sat in the pub watching the Betis game with a friend who actually dislikes Celtic to an extent. And he was really enjoying watching them play, and he couldn't believe how open the football was and couldn't believe how well they were playing and how nice they actually played. So I think my prediction for this Champions League is we may not get through from the group stages, but I do think Celtic will be a lot of fun to watch in these Champions League games.
Yeah, I don't know it'll be that different depending on the draw to what you just read out, but I'm pretty confident that Postecoglou will believe that he can go toe-to-toe and impose his style of play on the opposition. Whether we like it or not, that is how it's going to be. And, you know, history shows us there's some merit in that. You know, if you change the way you play, you might hold out, you might lose 2-0, etc. But you probably won't give yourself any chance of winning. So I don't have any great expectations in terms of outcomes. And, you know, because I just think the gulf in, ability in terms of the types of teams, more actually in pot two than pot one. Pot two is just incredibly strong. We're going to get two of the big ones and then probably somebody awkward as well. So listen.
Will I read out the pots just so people know what we're talking about here?
It's the same every year, pretty much.
Pot one has Real Madrid, Frankfurt, Man City, AC Milan, Bayern Munich, Paris Saint-Germain, Porto, Ajax. Then pot two, amazingly, you are correct, it probably is stronger. Liverpool, Chelsea, Barcelona, Juventus, Atletico Madrid, Seville, RB Leipzig, and Tottenham. And then pot three is Borussia Dortmund, Salzburg, Shakhtar Donetsk, Inter Milan, Napoli, Sporting, and Bayer Leverkusen. So quite a strong couple of pots there in terms of who we might be playing against.
I mean, listen, you saw the art of the possible last year in these games where, you know, injury ravaged, incoherent team playing to a particular pattern put in some pretty decent performances against very good sides. But as James rightly says, the ones we'll play will probably be a notch above. So I can't honestly sit here and claim that we're going to maybe get through that group or get many points. But I think it's vitally important that we make a good impression. And the reason I say that is more of a sort of longer term thing where, you know, just look at what happened last year. You know, there's no way in the world that, you know, the Rangers get £20 million for Calvin Bassey if it hadn't been for the exposure of a European run. You know, any player that's gone for anything like that, Scotland has usually put together two or three seasons of consistent high-class performances, not 6 months of good form. The kid might turn out to be a really great player. We'll wait and see. But that is a literally incredible amount of money for the level of play that he'd shown over the level of period that he'd shown. And that's because, mainly, as I say, because of the exposure at the European level. So it's absolutely vital for Celtic that even if we do get crushed, that we put in a damn good show, because people will see that and people will notice. And, you know, Celtic have got a pretty good record in that when teams have signed players from Celtic over the last 10 years for big money, they've generally worked out very well for the buying teams. We've got a good reputation in that regard, and that's important. Not I'm trying to sell all our players, but, you know, we're on a knife edge again this season. You know, the league champions get into the Champions League again. So, you know, there's a lot at stake in winning the league this season. And if we don't, we're likely to have to sell somebody. And if we've made a decent fist of it in Europe and at least put in good performances, and as you say, being exciting, being dangerous, no doubt there'll be some plucky defeats on the end of that. But people will see that and they'll recognise the level that we're playing at, and that will make the players, add value to the players and to the assets, which helps us to kind of grow going forward. So for me, it's all, not be surprised to hear me say it's all about performance. I'm not expecting great results, but we have to, we have to perform.
James?
Yeah, so I actually wrote a piece about this last week. I really do think it has a lot to do with the draw. Because if you look back at last season, which I did in part of the piece, Leverkusen and Betis, as good of teams as they are and were, they're not particularly aggressive when it comes to kind of midfield and high pressing. I mean, they're functional in that regard, but they're not what you would characterize as a top level tier of aggressiveness in that phase of the game. So, the inside straight would be obviously Frankfurt. That's who everyone wants to draw. As good as they are, Atletico Madrid is not really that kind of team either. A Shakhtar is not that kind of team to that degree either. So if you get those kind of three teams, then I would say, hey, or even a Leverkusen again, right? So you'd have, I think, a puncher's chance where, the hyper-aggressive Ange ball, we could win a 4-3 game instead of losing a 4-3 game like we did against Betis or, the kind of Leverkusen 3-2 game in Germany. So I think we'd have a puncher's chance and maybe have a decent group and maybe even, swing third place in with that kind of inside straight. My fear is if we get the higher level teams that are functional to high end in pressing, like a Salzburg in pot three, like Ajax and Bayern Munich, Chelsea, Man City, Liverpool, even Barcelona with the way they've kind of recalibrated under Xavi is more in that direction now, as opposed to how they had been, in the Messi era. So I those kind of teams, I'm a lot more afraid, because I think if we try to play out from the back against a functional high-end pressing side that also has the quality to make it to punish you, I have nightmares about that, where you could, kind of go back to some of the pastings that we got in the Rodgers era. And that's, I don't want to get embarrassed. I mean, that's the thing. That's my fear, is that we could get a real pasting against one of these teams if they have a good finishing day, like PSG did it, I think, in that 7-0 game or 7-1. I mean, they scored on like 80% of their shots, you know what I mean? And you face these kind of teams with this quality of player, you give them 3 in XG or 4 in XG, they can put up 6, 7, 8, 9 goals. And that's not even where you're saying, okay, you're having a flub at the back where you end up with, Mbappe one-on-one with Joe Hart. You know what I mean? Like, because Hart's 40 yards from goal. So that's where I have the sleepless nights, as if that were to occur. So if we get a decent draw, if you just get one of those kind of teams and an Atletico and a Bayer Leverkusen, then I think we can put up a good showing. But if we get two or three of those kind of teams, then it's just going to be, I think, really difficult.
Mm. From a results point of view, I would not want to get Liverpool. But from a pure football entertainment point of view, I'd love to get Liverpool. I think it would be an amazing occasion, first of all, and then just an amazing game, because both teams will just go at it for the 180 minutes of the two games. But on Alan's point, I would be more worried about a certain manager being seen to be doing really exciting and interesting things in the Champions League, as opposed to Celtic's players. That would be the only thing that would be concerning to me, is that if Celtic actually do something really good in the Champions League or in Europe this year, that people will start paying attention to what Ange Postecoglou is doing at the club. So that's the Champions League. We will do a proper preview and an in-depth look at the groups when we do have the draw. But we do have...
Ender, just one question. What pot are Manchester United in? I didn't quite...
Hmm. I don't think they're in a pot yet. They're away to pot. That's the pot they're in. Anyway, yes, we do have a game to look forward to this weekend, and we do have a league to look to defend, a league title to defend. Before we get into the game and the game specifics, then I did ask you to pick a player to watch for this season who you think is going to be probably either the most improved player this season that we're going to see more of from last year, or a player that you think is going to absolutely explode this year. So, James, I'll let you go first.
Yeah, I think as long as he, plays 30 plus league games, I think Kyogo is going to have a huge season, and be a vitally important player in the Champions League if we are going to have some success there. So I think he's the most important player, and if he stays fit, I think we'll probably have a good shot at player of the year. The goal scorers tend to get the glory, as we all know. As far as maybe a surprise kind of most improved, I think based off of just what we saw last season, I don't think it's a shocking one, but we've already talked about it, Satate. I mean, I think he could be a truly elite level player, whereas he didn't look like that as we've talked about in his brief time. So I think that's those are the two that I think are just poised to be huge this season.
Alan?
Yep. So I think in terms of improvement, I'm going to go with O'Reilly. He's young. He's got, I think, a massive ceiling still to climb towards in terms of his potential. Players like that, players at that age don't tend to win player of the year. I don't think he'll win that. But I think in terms of improvement, we'll see another step forward from him. I mean, he's just little glimpses in pre-season. He just looks... I mean, when he, I think the goals that he scored, I'm not being, honestly not being clever after the fact. I actually called the goals before he'd even hit the ball. It was that confident he was going to hit it. His body shape is, he just looked like he knew exactly what he was doing. I just think his brain just moves quicker than anyone else on the pitch. He's got an incredible future ahead of him. In terms of player of the year, last year I would have given it to Carter Vickers. His main attributes is his level of consistency of performance, and so I'm going to go again that Carter Vickers will actually be the player of the year throughout the season. I think he'll play virtually every game. Hasn't actually got any competition, so I agree with what James said about Kyogo, but I just don't think he'll play that as many minutes to be up there for that kind of award. But I think Carter Vickers will be Celtic's most consistent player, and I think player of the year should go to players who play a good, not necessarily have the highest level, but have the best level consistently over a season. Yeah. I think he's the one that I think shows that performance level, if you like.
We might try to do sort of player tracking this season if we have the opportunity, especially when I get back, and we'll keep an eye on individual performances as well as sort of the team performances that come across the season. I are very revealed that I think it's going to be Matt O'Reilly. I think he's going to be the best player in the league next year. And I think it's going to be quite obvious that he's going to be the best player in the league next year as well. Hatate, I see great things for next season. And as well as that, I think, Anthony Ralston could be pushing Juranovic for that starting right-back slot really, really hard this year. I think we're seeing already in preseason, I know social media isn't a great barometer of these things, but people are already catching up with the fact that Ralston's delivery is that little bit better than Juranovic's delivery as well. So, I mean, it's a high ceiling for the likes of him as well. So let's wait and see. Hopefully he will have the sort of season that he did have last year and he continues on. But more importantly, how is Liam Scales going to play this weekend in the Liam Scales derby when Celtic take on Aberdeen on Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, it's, what chance have Celtic got? I'm pretty sure he can't play, right? I don't think he can play in all seriousness. I don't think he can play.
No, I'm not sure.
Which is absolutely devastating for Aberdeen because he's clearly the best player that they've ever had. So it's a massive blow for them. Scales can't play. No, look, they've had a terrific season, and I mean, it's difficult, you know, they're playing against lower league teams, but then we've seen a few examples where that's not worked out too well for some of the other Premier League sides, and mentioning no names, but they've done the job, and they've seemed to have assimilated a large number of new signings. I'm not going to pretend I know a lot about them. I know James was pretty disparaging last season about the fit of the players that they picked, and I think they've got a new goalkeeper now as well. I think Joe Lewis had a bit gone over the curve in that respect. So I'll let him chime in on the actual signings that they've made, but can't argue with the start they've made. 12 goals, none against. They also performed quite well in pre-season for what you want to read into that. So listen, we're going to be facing a really confident side, and that's great. It's going to make it, hopefully they'll feel they can have a go and try and attack Celtic. But I kind of agree with James. I don't tend to try and predict, and certainly don't like predicting big wins, but you just get the feeling of Postecoglou Celtic click for the glimpses that we saw in pre-season when the games were kind of active, that first sort of 45, 50 minutes of games. You sort of think, whoa, you know, if you're SPFL level opposition, that's going to be really hard to deal with. So I'm expecting a really exciting game, actually. I think Aberdeen will give it a good go. I think Celtic will probably win. I think we'll see some fireworks.
Yeah, so Aberdeen upgraded their analytics staff sometime in the autumn last year. And I think their transfer window reflects that. Last summer's was shockingly incoherent and bad in my estimation. I said it at the time. And this season I see a lot more coherence. I think Goodwin is, you know, from what I've seen, again, I don't pretend to have watched a ton of St. Mirren games, a fair amount when he was there, but even when he would face Celtic, at least a level of coherence, because again, that's the standard domestically. I mean, you have so many people that are incoherent that when you just a level of coherence brings out a huge relative advantage. So I think Goodwin is at least a decent manager, if not a good one. He's not going to do, you know, completely ridiculous moronic things, which can't be said all the time for other opposition. So I think Aberdeen's likely to fight for third this season. And their underlying metrics actually were decent last year. And to Alan's point, they addressed one of their glaring problems the last few seasons, which was Lewis at keeper, who was just really bad from an underlying performance metrics, like one of the worst players in the league. So that just getting somebody reasonably competent at keeper might, you know, earn them a lot more points. So specifically for this weekend against us, you know, if they do try to play us with any degree of progressive strategy, I think we'll punish that pretty badly. And so I think that might start, and then they might get into damage limitations mode sometime in the first half or early in the second. Because the golf is just significant to begin with from a quality perspective, and the way that we're moving directionally as far as, you know, taking this more fulsome implementation of Ange's style of play and refining it and players comfortable with it in the full preseason. I just think it's a really daunting task for somebody like Aberdeen, let alone on trophy day at home, you know, decent weather, probably. I haven't looked at the forecast like that matters a few days out in Glasgow, but so, you know, I think it's a tough mix for Aberdeen. But generally I'm pretty bullish on Aberdeen in the league for the season.
A couple of bits of news today. Ange confirmed that Starfelt is going to be missing for this game, as is Itoguchi. So we're like,
I think Jens as well. Yeah, I saw Jens picked up something in training. Didn't I see that?
He wasn't mentioned as being injured.
No, Ange didn't mention him as being in.
Okay. Well, good.
So the likelihood is we're probably going to be looking at the same starting lineup that started against Norwich in the last game of season. Again, Celtic have rejected apparently a 3.5 million bid from Toulouse for Stephen Welsh. I think that's their second bid now for the defenders. So the starting lineup, is Stephen Welsh going to be here in a couple of weeks? Is he going to be someone that's going to be there as a backup to the defence, or how are we expecting the starting lineup to be?
Yeah, I think it'll be largely very predictable. I think Welsh will start because that's just the least risky option, and he's started most of the preseason games. So Ange isn't one for playing cat and mouse with lineups. So I think it'll be pretty close to, you know, I think Taylor will start. I think it'll be McGregor, Hatate, O'Reilly, Yota, Maeda, and Kyogo. I don't think there's going to be a lot of drama around the lineup. I think it's interesting they've knocked back two bids for Welsh. I'm still in the not quite convinced camp, but on the same by the same token, I couldn't sit here and tell you the guy's been disastrous or he's not worth as a young player. Seeing how he develops, he absolutely is. My biggest concern about him is, like Starfelt, his dual win rate is just below my benchmark for what I think a good Celtic centre goes, and it's mainly down to lack of aerial ability in terms of winning headed duels, which, as we know in Scotland, unfortunately, is something which is important. I don't think Jens has been in the door long enough. I liked the 30 minutes that I saw of him. I think he's going to offer something a little bit different. It's like having a younger, slightly faster Julian, which I think is a good thing. Again, like Turnbull last season, people are very quick to forget how effective Julian was when he signed for Celtic. So anyway, long story short, I don't think Jens will start. I think it will be Welsh, but it's an interesting one that we're knocking back reasonable money for someone that, you know, with the scouting that we've shown in the last kind of year, you know, 3.5 million, if you said go and replace Welsh, I reckon we could probably come up with somebody pretty decent.
I think the other interesting part to me is not only that there's interest, but who's the interest from. And Toulouse is part of a broader, one of these groups, that ownership groups. I think they're backed by Redbird Capital. And they've, you know, embraced kind of the money ball, quote unquote, approach. And, you know, kind of work their way up out of the second division in France to get back up into the top division. Alan and I talked a lot about how he's improved on the ball. And in the right league, in the right system, and playing on the right side, you know, again, it's another thing. I mean, he's hardly gotten to play at right center back for Celtic. We keep putting these players on the left that maybe don't suit the left all that well. So I could see him being, an attractive candidate for a team that's looking for a very specific profile. And Toulouse fits that kind of club now, where they're going to see a specific profile that suits the way that they're looking to play, and plug in somebody like a Welsh to kind of optimize what his strengths are relative to his weaknesses. I don't think the French league's particularly aerial as European leagues go. It tends to be more on the ground, so that would certainly suit him. So again, to Alan's point, is given the way we're using him, is Welsh, you know, somebody that we can't replace? I don't think so. I think it would actually be not that difficult, because we're not really using him in a way that's going to be optimizing his development and his strengths, because we're playing him on the left to a degree. I'm still cautiously concerned about, if that's the way to say it, that's a clumsy. I'm a little concerned that we're not selling anyone this summer. Let's put it that way. I think the discipline of that.
This time yet.
Well, that's right. And that's, you know, I've been out on a ledge. If we can get 10, 15 million for Juranovic, I mean, I'd hit that bid so fast. It would make your head spin. People talking 20, 25 million, I think it's nuts. Again, because I think if you get that kind of money with reasonable scouting, you can replace him and still bank some money. And I think that discipline of selling people when you should sell them, right? Juranovic is 27. Yes, he's an international. Yes, it's a World Cup season. Like, there's a lot of things you can project onto him that's very positive right now. Well, that's usually, like Alan said with Bassey, he's coming out of this amazing European run. You know, that's a sell high. It's like sell high, buy low. I don't think Juranovic is probably going to have a much better time. Maybe this year.
After the World Cup, January.
Maybe, but what if he has a bad World Cup? You know, it's that's the thing. So I think not selling anybody by the end of this coming month. You know, we still have a lot of needs, as Alan and I have talked about. Like at that European level, we're still in need of some investment and it's not one, you know, we don't just need one guy to cap it off. So to be able to create more resources to address multiple needs, I think would be a positive thing. And if doing that with Welsh could be part of it, I would be fine with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just to update, to correct myself on the Stephen Welsh situation, it was a season-long loan with an option to buy of $3.5 million is what Toulouse wanted. That's what Anthony Joseph is reporting to.
Yeah, they're not dumb money. That's the thing. You go back to your counterparties, and I've said this at the time, right, when Leverkusen bought Frimpong for, you know, $12 million, and people were raving, oh, that's such good business. It doesn't look so good when Bassey goes for 20, right? And Frimpong's been a, you know, legit European level fullback, and he wasn't down to 1 year or anything like that. You know, Leverkusen's a reasonably smart counterparty. Brentford is a smart counterparty, right? Yeah. So when you have smart counterparties or the people looking to buy, you know, you usually should progress with some caution, because they're usually not throwing money down the drain.
We've got a long way to go, right, in terms of the rebuild. As I said, we're not there yet. You know, if I look through the first team squad, there's still, I would argue, probably five players there that, you know, I wouldn't have in the first team squad. Okay, and you know that they are places that you want to have people pushing first team places for. So I still think there's a long way to go. Actually, probably six. I forgot McCarthy. So you know, yeah, there's still I think it's still an awful long way.
Oh, I think we just lost Alan as he was in his mid-rant there. So,
into the vortex.
Yes, exactly. I think we're pretty much about to wrap up this before, and we'll give Alan 2 minutes just to get back. But on Frimpong, Frimpong's going to be a 50 million player probably in the next 2 years or so. I think Alan has just come back to us now. Alan,
yeah, sorry, I don't know what happened there. Okay,
you were mid rant, and I cut you off. It was
quite right.
So yeah, I think we were just about to finish this off. Anyway, what I was saying was that, like, Frimpong is going to be a £50 million player next year. Probably, he's already been linked with moves like that. He's already been linked with moves to much higher clubs than Bayer Leverkusen, which is saying something, because Bayer Leverkusen are a pot ahead of us in the Champions League right now. So, look, there's going to be loads of developments. I think Ange also confirmed that he's happy that he's addressed a couple of places in the recruitment situation, but is still expecting some activity in the next couple of weeks. Mikey Johnson is probably going to be a player that's going to be leaving the club on loan. Ange was asked about him and said maybe, you know, he's got a lot of talent, but maybe Celtic's not the best place for him to develop. And, you know, if that's the best thing is for what Mikey Johnson, for his professional career, it's whether it's at Celtic or not is irrelevant in terms of that. So just to finish off the podcast then, both expecting a result this weekend. First off, yes?
Yes, sir. Comfortable one.
Yeah. Quick fire. Sorry, yeah. Quick fire.
Sorry,
are Celtic going to win the league?
I think so.
Yeah, I'm obviously that's the hope. I'm nervous.
It's quick fire, James.
Yeah, 50-50. Yes, but 50-50. I'm uncomfortably nervous on that.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we get a result anyway, and we will be with you across the season again as we kick off the 2022-2023 SBFL season. If you want to support the channel, do hit subscribe to the YouTube channel where we will be uploading this podcast every week. You can get the podcast on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter, which is at the Huddle Breakdown, or at Huddle Breakdown rather, and you can follow James at Juco James on Twitter and Alan at Celtic by Numbers. I'm Enda_call on Twitter as well if you want to follow along for the season. And if you do actually want to go the extra step to support the channel, you can hit the link in the description below and download the One Football app, because they're sponsoring some things on the channel over the coming season as well. So that's the best way to support the channel over the next couple of weeks as we get into the new season for the SBFL. Hope everybody enjoys it, and I hope you enjoy the Huddle Breakdown across the season as well. James, Alan, thanks as always.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Enjoy the game.
Okay, we will be back with you next week. Good luck.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.